telling it as it is. David Curtin on TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show here on Today's News Talk. We have a packed show for you today because there's so much going on in the news. Obviously, the dreadful news last night that the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, had been shot in an assassination attempt. He's better, or recovering, not better, obviously, because he's been shot, but he's recovering and his condition is stable. But here to talk about that later on the show is TNT's resident news analyst, Basil Valentine. Also on the show, we will be talking about increasing tensions between the UK and China, as the UK government has summoned the Chinese ambassador to discuss potential spying risks by China. Is this true or not? We shall see. We're going to discuss that with TNT's other presenter, Lembit Opik. And he's obviously with us for many, many hours at the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Also on the show, Anna de Buissere will be here to discuss TV doctors. Are they getting paid too much to promote big pharma medicines and experimental injections? Should they be allowed to promote experimental injections on television shows? We'll be discussing that later on in the show. If you want to get in touch, you can write in, but you can also call in as well. As always, please do so. You can call from the UK, the USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and wherever you are in the world. And if you want to do so, the numbers to call in are here.
Our lines are open. From the US and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-3100. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The UK government is going to announce today new guidance about education and specifically sex and relationships education. They're going to say that children under 9 years old should not learn sex education. They're also going to say that schools should not be teaching gender ideology without saying that it is a contested idea, that it isn't actually a scientific fact. Well, that all sounds good, and it's reasonably good if they actually believe, if I actually believe that this is genuine and they really wanted to undo all of the damage that they've done over the last 14 years in power. Let's remember that this is the very same government that introduced it into schools in the first place. And the piece of legislation that introduced relationships and sex education to schools was called the Children and Social Care Act 2017. It was a government bill. There was an amendment by Labour to put in compulsory relationships and sex education in secondary schools and compulsory relationships education in primary schools. But the government backed the amendment, and of course it went through without much resistance at all. The thing is, though, this isn't really sex education as we know it. If you're an adult, you probably went to school and you learned about reproduction in your biology lessons. Before I got involved in politics, I was a science teacher, so I taught that myself. I taught reproduction, and that's all sex education was 20, 30, 40 years ago. What we have now is comprehensive sexuality education, and there's a big difference, because what that is not just about reproduction, it's about indoctrinating children with all these cultural Marxist ideologies and LGBT ideologies, the queer theory, and the idea that children are sexual beings from birth and that they have children's sexual rights and reproductive rights. It goes way, way beyond just teaching them about the birds and the bees and the human reproductive system, which age appropriately to do is about 12 years old, and that's what I did. The fact that the government is saying, oh, well, aren't we wonderful? We're going to stop schools teaching this to children under the age of 9 means that from the age of 9, they're still going to be subject to comprehensive sexuality education. And even if schools teach them, well, gender ideology is this, but it's contested, they're still going to hear about it. And they're still going to hear about the more insidious idea that there are all different family types, which are all equal. Now, in the past, we taught that there was a mother and a father. They have children. They bring up kids. The best way is for a mother and a father to be married to each other, because on every measure in every study, children do better in that type of family. But what schools teach now in RSE or PSHE or any other number of these newfangled subjects to indoctrinate children into cultural Marxism, they're taught that all different types of families are equal. So a family with a mother and a father and children is equal to a family with two men, three women, a dog, a horse, and somebody else's kids, which is clearly not true. But that's the ideology that they teach in schools. Now, this is not rowing back much. It's a classic Hegelian dialectic. The cultural Marxists have got involved in politics and education, infiltrated the system, and they've pushed their agenda so far. And now an election is coming back, and the fake conservatives are rowing back the agenda just a little bit and saying, aren't we wonderful? We're traditional. We're conservative. No, you're not. Because if you were, you'd push the agenda right back to the edge. You'd introduce Section 28 again or something like it to protect children from any kind of sexualization and anything to do with the LGBT agenda, which shouldn't be taught in schools, because the premise of educating children in this area is with parents. Parents are the primary educators of their children. And unless we get back to recognizing that, we're still going to be going down the path of degeneracy, whether it's all the way or partially, as the fake conservatives are doing, playing a very, very clever game before the election. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma Cooper is with me on the show. As always, Gemma, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Here with some UK headlines. And talking of elections, Sir Keir Starmer in the last 10 minutes has stood up. He's in Essex, a key battleground, some are saying, for the next election, which will be in the next few months. He's promising to change Britain as he unveils his strategy to win the next election. Health, energy, immigration are among his top priorities. And he is announcing that at the moment as we speak. So there'll be more on that story to come later, as Labour are widely expected to win after the local elections and mayoral results as well, where they pretty much swept the board with the mayoral elections. Staying with politics, this isn't such good news for Labour, actually. It has to be said that Labour's campaign chief claimed more apparently than £40,000 in expenses from the taxpayer for renting a constituency home despite owning the property next door. Pat McFadden, though, he is the campaign chief. He insists he complied with independent parliamentary standards authority rules. He says he sold the property he owned years ago at a considerable loss, which he covered himself, and he always complied with the rules, and there's nothing to see here. But that's an interesting story doing the rounds this morning. And also in the UK, death by dangerous cycling is set to become a new law after MPs back changes. Cyclists who do cause death by reckless driving or cycling or careless cycling could face up to 14 years in prison, David, once this law has been passed. It's currently going through Parliament.
Well, Gemma, thank you. All interesting stories, lots going on in the UK. But what really interests me is, you know, what you're saying about Labour there. I mean, this is breaking. Obviously, Keir Starmer is out on the campaign trail. An election is coming up. You know, they do this, whether it's 2 months before an election, 3, 6 months before an election, we don't know. But they're all getting psyched up, ready for it. And he's putting his policies forward one by one. But, you know, you mentioned there health, energy and immigration. But I don't think he's going to have anything to say on any of those topics, which is going to be inspiring at all, because we know exactly what Labour are going to do on those three things. I mean, on immigration, They're pretending that they're going to be tougher on immigration than the fake Conservatives, but of course they're not, because all through the last 30 years or more from Blair onwards, they have been proponents of mass rapid immigration. It started under Blair and it's continued under Cameron, May, Johnson and Sunak. They're not going to change that, are they? And energy, we know that they support all of the climate alarmist agenda, so there's going to be more wind turbines, more solar panels, more things that aren't going to provide us with any energy or as much energy as we need to keep our lights on and to keep industry running. And healthcare, well, they're all for the NHS, aren't they? I mean, you know, the NHS is a sacred cow, and all they're going to do is give it more money, burn more money to give to the NHS without actually making it more efficient in any way, shape or form whatsoever. I mean, that's my thoughts. I mean, you can call me cynical, but I think anyone, you know, who's been watching politics for any length of time will know that that's what Labour will do. Whatever they say now, you know exactly what they're going to do when they get in power, and they're not going to make anything better in any of these areas. I say when, but it is still a case of if, because they haven't won the election yet. And as they say, a week is a long time in politics. So 6 months is a very long time. And I'm still hopeful that something will happen that means that we don't get a Labour government with Keir Starmer and all of his disastrous policies.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, he's very buoyed up by the local election results, and especially the mayoral results, where I think 10 out of the 11 mayors now, the big mayors, are Labour. And he says we need to build on that. He says the next phase is crucially important, and it's the next phase he is setting out now as we speak. His speech started at 10 o'clock UK time, 10 a.m. UK time in Essex. And as well as the key things you've just outlined, he also wants to bring back economic stability to the UK. Antisocial behaviour will be something he's very hot on, he's saying, and also 6,500 new teachers he's promising. But yeah, very interesting. I mean, this whole new GB energy, Great British Energy, that he wants to create a nationalised energy system. This is off the back, of course, of saying they're going to renationalise the railway. Some are saying the Conservative Party have already started that because they created the Great British Rail Network or great something like that. Yeah, Great British Rail Network. And this Great British Energy that Labour want to do is off the back of things that the Conservatives have already done. There's also going to be a big advertising campaign that will accompany these six key points. It's going to be on vans, billboards, all kinds of things. It's the largest spend that Labour have ever done on an election. And as party spokesman this morning said, this will not be the sum total of our election offering. What Keir Starmer is currently announcing now as we speak will be part of our election offering. So they clearly have got victory in their sights. The local elections have buoyed them up, but it's quite right. You know, they can say everything and do everything and get the votes, and then as soon as they're in power, reality bites, you know. So yeah, let's see what he says. I'll keep updates throughout the day here on TNT, because it does look like he is going to become the next prime minister, and of course that will affect everybody in the UK.
Well, I'm going to do my best to stop him, obviously. You know, I've got my party. We're going to be putting up as many candidates as we can for the Heritage Party, but we shall see. You know, they obviously get a lot more media attention because the mainstream media focuses on the two sides of the Uniparty, the biggest. I mean, the fake Conservatives and the migrant Labour Party, as I call them. They also give a lot of attention to the Lib Dems and the Greens as well, but not as much as those big two. So, you know, it isn't a level playing field, these general elections, because they have hustings and they just invite two candidates or four candidates to, you know, and then they twist the narrative that way. But, you know, what you're saying here, like Keir Starmer is going to have six big points. This reminds me of 2015, where Ed Miliband unveiled the Ed Stone. I don't know if you remember that. It was a big stone with like 12 words on it, 6 points. It's like low immigration or just immigration or the NHS, and that was it. And there was nothing really to do with any substance there, and you just looked at it and thought, this is an absolute joke. And you can't trust a word they say. I really don't think that you can with Labour either. I mean, interesting thing there, you did talk about nationalising energy and nationalising the railways, and I think those are generally popular ideas, because we've seen prices go up and up and up and up over the last 10, 20 years since those sectors have been privatized. But the railways can be nationalized without any expense to the taxpayer, because just when the franchises end, they can be brought back into the nation state. The government can take them over. With energy, it's a little bit more difficult, because they'd have to buy up all of the shares, or a significant portion of the shares which are on the stock market. They can't just go and say, I'm taking this, because that's theft. I think there'd be a lot of legal challenges to that. So I wonder, promising to nationalize the energy companies, I mean, that would cost hundreds of billions, I would imagine, and they're not going to be able to find the money to do that without getting us into a lot more national debt, which they say they want to avoid because they want to be financially responsible. So the whole thing doesn't make sense. There seems to be all kinds of contradictions in what he's saying already, and he's only been 20 minutes since he started.
Well, that the devil will be in the detail of that particular one. He's talking about creating a new Great British Energy sort of a firm, if you want to call it that, or utility supplier. Will it be running alongside other energy companies, or will it be a takeover? That is something that we will need to hear what he actually has got to say on that proposal in the speech he's giving now. But as I say, I'll be on TNT for the next few hours bringing a few updates. We need to keep an eye on this, because if the local elections are to be kind of used as an indicator, he's going to be in charge of us, and God help us all. I mean, any of them personally, that's personally speaking. will we see a shift in the political landscape? Will we see people from the freedom movement standing up as independents? We might well do. Or will reform suddenly be the surprise that overtakes everyone from the inside? We don't know. We don't know. But certainly it's definitely important we hear what he's got to say. And I'll be bringing updates over the next few hours.
Absolutely. Well, we shall see. I don't want them myself. I really don't. And almost everyone I speak to is really fearful of a Labour government coming in, because they just think, well, this is going to be a disaster. But I say to them, well, is it going to be any worse than what we have now? Because we've got this fake conservative party, and they are just doing almost everything that Labour are doing, but they're covering themselves up with these fig leaves. Like at the moment, they say, oh, we've got the Rwanda scheme, we're going to send migrants to Rwanda, or we're doing this to protect children, we're not going to have sex education to children under 9 years old. And really, I don't believe a word of them. Of what they say, it doesn't look like there's much difference between them whatsoever. So, that's why they're called the Uniparty. And that's why we need an alternative. And like you say, let's hope that more people from the freedom movement, if you like, more people that watch the show, will get involved in politics. And I say this regularly. We sit here and we talk about the news. You're watching, which is wonderful, but we need to do more than just speaking and listening and talking. We need to actively go and get involved in politics, join a party, join my party, or even if you don't want to be in a party, be an independent, stand as a candidate. So at least then people have got a choice to vote for someone who's not Labour, fake Conservative, Lib Dem and Green. I have a lot of people, after the local election saying, I love you, I love your party, but we didn't have anyone to vote for. And my answer is, well, look, you are the answer. You could have stood. It's not that hard. Once you've done it the first time, there's a few forms to fill in. You have to fill in a few forms, hand them into the council, but then you're a candidate. You're on the ballot paper. It really isn't too hard. It will take an hour or two of your time to fill in some forms, get a couple of signatures from your neighbours, and then take it to the council office to hand in. So, do go for it. Do give it a go. Do stand yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to come and be your candidate. Many of you have got to be the candidates yourself. Like, I'm trying to find 650 people around the country to stand in all the seats in the country. It's a hard job, you know. We have a few dozen people at the moment. There's more adding to our number all the time. People are joining. People are putting themselves forward to be candidates in all regions of the country, including Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales and, you know, the north, the south. London is fantastic. But we need more people. Otherwise, I won't be able to field a full slate of candidates. So please, please, my appeal to you, if there's anything you can do this year, you know, to stop this rot from happening, which looks like it's coming at us like a train coming in the face when the general election is coming down the line, stand to be a candidate in the general election. You know, you can come and join me and I'll help you to do it. So there you go. Lecture over. There we go. Gemma, thank you. Anything more you've got to say about the general election? I mean, will you be standing yourself, Gemma, do you think?
No, I won't be standing. I mean, I haven't voted for a very long time. I've been politically disenfranchised for quite a while. I didn't vote in Brexit. I didn't give my energy to that particular conversation. I'm still on the fence with it all, in terms of, you know, giving the system credibility, but it is the only system that we've got. So I do see there's a woman in my kind of neck of the woods, ostensibly in Swindon, Debbie Hicks. She was one of the people that started the Keep It Cash campaign. She got arrested going into hospitals during the scandemic and filming empty wards on her mobile phone. But she's standing in Swindon, I think Swindon North. And she's had some good reaction out on the streets of Swindon in the UK. So it is possible. It's absolutely possible. You know, if you've got fire in your belly and you want to see change and you're sick of all the authoritarian control of the last 4 years, it is possible. You know, so let's see what happens. Let's see what we see on the campaign trail.
Absolutely. Good words of advice. That's a great story from Swindon North as well. And I know, you know, all around the country, our candidates around, you know, north, south, wherever, had wonderful, wonderful feedback when they were going out campaigning. It was so positive. I just had a meeting with all our candidates that stood last week, and they were so optimistic and so positive about the response that they had going round, knocking on doors, because people, you know, who have not heard of us before, just saw that there is an alternative. They're fed up of what we've got. They don't want the parties that are beholden to the UN, the WHO, the World Economic Forum. They want an alternative. And and people will vote for us, and hopefully in big enough numbers that we can actually have a government that restores our nation and restores freedom and democracy in the true sense, not the fake freedom and democracy that they all talk about. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for joining me and having a good conversation about this on the show today. And I'll see you again tomorrow, I hope. Thank you so much. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Chris Smith.
A Supreme Court judge has shown no mercy at all to military whistleblower and former defence lawyer David McBride today, despite McBride pleading guilty. And it's almost as if that meant for nothing. And telling the court he was trying to expose the allegedly corrupt top brass of the military. He wasn't there to lag on the soldiers who put their lives on the front line. He was sent today to jail for 5 years and 8 months. 5 years and 8 months. There are manslaughter convictions and convictions for killing people that don't get 5 years and 8 months.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
Now on to a contentious issue which has been brought to light by the likes of Dr. Carl Hennigan. It seems that TV doctors have been paid to advertise or promote medicines, vaccines. Well, they're not really called vaccines. They are the experimental mRNA injections, which we were all coerced into taking. Is this right? Should they be allowed to do this? Or is it even against the law? Well, to discuss that, we have a freedom warrior with us on the show today. And I'm delighted to have on the show Anna de Boisseret. Anna, welcome to the show.
Hello, David. Thank you very much for inviting me on. And I'm very much looking forward to discussing this very contentious issue.
It is, isn't it? I know, because you were fantastic, because you did so much activism to go round to where some of these injection centres were and try to make people aware that they were not giving their informed consent to have them, and that they shouldn't be taking them because it was going to harm them. You did a great job on that. Do you actually think? I actually think that you've saved some lives by doing what you did. Do you think you have?
Well, that was the aim. You know, I'm a soldier, and I'm sworn an oath to protect and serve. And I felt that lives were at risk. And so I felt it was absolutely imperative for me to, if necessary, boots on the ground, go and warn people, because I certainly didn't feel that people were getting informed consent from the TV, from the politicians, even from their own doctors, from the analysis that I'd done in accordance with the law. And I knew that most people, you know, nobody's taught law at school, David, and very few people learn any law once they leave school. And so my analysis right at the beginning of the pandemic was that people wouldn't have a clue about what laws were real and what applied to them and which ones were, you know, voidable, etc. And so I felt it was really important to tell people what the informed consent laws were and the medical ethics, so that they could actually make a properly informed decision. Because otherwise, you know, it was the blind leading the blind, people saying, oh, it's fine. No, it's safe and effective. I think those words will haunt me to my grave.
Yeah, that's the mantra that they put out. It was like a spell, wasn't it? That you have to believe this. And if you questioned it, you were questioning all of these people that were paraded in front of you as experts, like Chris Whitty and Jonathan Van Tam and all these people. You know, you and I saw through this from the beginning. But I mean, what you've said, that's a whole other issue about how education has been dumbed down so much that people know enough to do, you know, a mindless job, but they don't know anything at all, or hardly anything at all, about our rights, you know, and common law rights, informed consent, medical autonomy, on all of this kind of thing. But coming back to the issue, you know, that's in this article by Dr. Carl Hennigan, it's called "Celebrity Doctors Are Being Paid to Promote Vaccines Is Against the Law," and that's the title of the article. We've seen a lot of these TV doctors. I mean, I don't watch them myself. I don't have a TV, but they have been shamelessly promoting these injections, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, whatever. And some of them have been paid. Are they allowed to do this, or is it actually against the law?
Well, it's a very good question, Dave. And as far as I'm concerned, no, they're not. And I'd love to hear other legal analysis after this programme. But, you know, Carl quite rightly quotes the Human Medicines Regulations 2012, section 289, which the subtitle is Recommendations by Scientists, etc. And I'll quote directly from the law, which states, a person may not publish an advertisement relating to a medicinal product that refers to a recommendation by A, scientists, B, healthcare professionals, or C, persons who, because of their celebrity, could encourage use of the medicinal product. So that's what the law actually states. Any guidelines or, you know, codes of practice, etc., have to be based on that piece of legislation, because that's the primary piece of legislation that all those codes and guidelines will be made under. So that very clearly says that they cannot publish an advertisement recommended by a healthcare professional.
But I suppose you could argue, well, if they're just on the sofa in a segment on a talk show, it's not actually an advertisement. They're just part of a program rather than in the adverts in the middle. Is that a loophole that they can use and exploit?
David, my starting point with all of these things is to cite the law and then let people come up with their defense. I'm not going to make their defenses for them.
No, but I'm just questioning, obviously. That may be an argument. I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yes, I understand. But, you know, I personally like to cite the law. And then when people come back with various ideas about what people may cite in defence, I say, well, obviously, the court will decide ultimately whether they think that that's a sufficient defence. But, you know, the law states what it states. It's then a matter for interpretation. And then, of course, that's where the codes of conduct and the guidance, etc., comes in. What's, I think, tricky about the codes of conduct and the guidance is you have to know where to find them and then piece them together. And what I've found over the years is that codes of guidance and codes of practice are not necessarily accurately reflecting the law. Mm. Maybe necessarily so, because they reduce it to legalese. I mean, they reduce it from legalese to plain English. But quite often I read it and I think, no, that's not what the law says. And I go back and I check the law. It says, no. So I say to people, go to the primary legislation. That's where you find, you know, where the law is cited. But David, as I say, most people don't know the law, including doctors. And I work with doctors, a multidisciplinary team of doctors, and have been for about 3 years now, analysing what's been going on and, you know, going through the evidence, etc. And the evidence they've given me is that, you know, doctors aren't taught law at school, same as the rest of us. When they go to medical college, they're given very, very little legal training. And I'm told that a lot of it, including the informed consent laws, are taught by other medics, not by lawyers at all. So right. I've been to other medical schools. They do have lawyers coming in. So it's obviously patchy. But the question is, how can medics teach the law competently? I don't know why they think they can. That would be like me claiming that I was a medic and perfectly able to do an operation. Mm. It doesn't make sense. So, you know, and the other evidence I've been told is that most doctors haven't even read their contract, their employment contract, let alone the medical practice codes of guidance from the GMC, which, for example, contains a very useful information leaflet called Consent, all about informed consent. And it sets out the main case law, sets out all the principles. Most doctors I've spoken to haven't even read it. Let alone the actual law that it contains, let alone sat and analysed it and thought about how it applies to the situation. Mm. So going back to these TV doctors, you know, sitting where I sit as a lawyer, knowing about informed consent and medical ethics, I'm watching these TV doctors come on and breach it, you know, with impunity, it seems. And I think, well, are you completely ignorant of the law of informed consent? You know that the law of informed consent requires that you state what the material risks are. And yet you're on television saying it's safe and effective. You haven't said, however, while we think it's overall safe, there are some material risks. The law requires us to cite those. And material risks include the risk of death, as has been reported on the MHRA, although it hasn't been confirmed yet, et cetera, et cetera. But they need to raise it. And they're not. Mm. They're doing the complete opposite, which is to minimize it.
We know now the AstraZeneca is not safe because it's been withdrawn. But you know, anyone watching would know that the Pfizer injection has got 9 pages and hundreds or it's 900 or something safety risks in the documentation that they wanted to seal for 75 years. But the court in the US opened them up. So everyone from that should realize you can't say these things are safe and effective. And also the fact that there wasn't proper long-term safety testing done. It was rushed through in 3 months when it should have had 10 years of safety testing. That's basic. Yeah. So,
well, David, that's what shocked me was, I again, right at the beginning, back up slightly, I think I had an advantage over many in that I used to work for Pfizer as an external management consultant. And part of that consultancy job was to work with the scientists who were making the vaccines to go through the regulatory and compliance procedure with them. And at that time, I was told it took at least 10 to 15 years because of the phase 1, 2, 3, 4 clinical trials, et cetera. And so no amount of throwing money at something will reduce the time period over which you need to monitor someone for safety trials. You know, 6 months is 6 months is 6 months. You can't buy a shorter time period. And so when doctors were doing the initial risk analysis for the informed consent, as you say, there was no long-term safety data. So how on earth could they make the claim that it was safe?
No, there's no way.
I don't understand it.
What should happen to these people now? Because they've made all these claims. They're doctors, so they are assumedly highly intelligent, highly educated people with degrees, you know, medicine degree and so on. Maybe you're obviously a doctorate. They're doctors, so they do their postdoc and everything. They should know this. And they're telling us serfs here that they consider to be low intelligence. So we need to tell you, you're doing this and I'm the expert. But they had, and now it's coming out that clearly they were wrong. I mean, the very least that should happen to them is that they're taken off air, but they all seem to still be there. I mean, what should happen to these people, in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, they should be investigated. I mean, I'm also an employment lawyer, right? So the first thing I would do is, you know, if I was employing one of these doctors, as I was a TV show or radio show, I would now be saying to them, you know, on what basis do you feel you could have made those claims? And how have you upheld Section 289 of the Human Medicines Regulations and the various codes of practice, including, incidentally, the Pharmaceutical Code of Practice, which specifically says that you shouldn't be using celebrities, et cetera, to promote prescription medicines, et cetera. They give themselves a carve out for vaccine, but we know it's not a vaccine. So they should be investigated for being a potential breach of their contract. They haven't disclosed to the public the fact that they were being paid by these pharmaceutical companies. That's an absolute necessity. They should be investigated by the GMC, in my view, because the GMC also says that all conflicts of interest should be declared. And I don't understand why Ofcom isn't investigating them either. Except that we know that Ofcom is one of the World Economic Forum offshoots. And unfortunately...
Right, there you go. there you have it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Anna, thank you so much for coming on the show and discussing that with me today. I really hope they do get investigated, but I wouldn't trust them with my dead hamster, let alone a human being's life. Anyway, thank you so much. Let's hope that happens.
Can I just say one thing? Yes. Thank you to all the doctors who are upholding informed consent. There are good ones out there too. Bless you.
Indeed. Absolutely. Great. Thanks for joining me, Anna, and hopefully we can talk to you again on the show. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy, there's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working, so I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief, and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
One in four Australian women experience domestic violence in their lifetime. Staying is dangerous, but leaving can mean homelessness for them and their children. With your generosity, the Salvos can provide crisis services and ongoing support, helping women find a way out of violence and a way back into a safe and stable life. Help us leave no one in need. Please donate to the Red Shield Appeal today.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, there are more potential issues between the UK and China, tensions in the air, because the UK government has accused China of spying in the UK. Now, to discuss the potential ramifications of an escalating diplomatic row, we have TNT's Saturday and Sunday presenter with us, Lembit Opik. Lembit, welcome to the show.
Good to see you.
Really good to see you as well, Lambert. Now, you've been following the story about the China spying. What is this? Do you think this is a fabricated story? Why is there suddenly a big rash of stories, a big push to paint China as being some hostile power that is spying on us?
At best, it's fabricated drivel. At least I hope it's that. At worst, it is a confession by the British government that we shouldn't have exported all of our manufacturing, our IT development, and so much else to China. Think about the implications here. If we're being spied on by China, why did we give them carte blanche to design all the systems they would be using and to spy on us and sell it back to us in cars and phones and everything else? And so in that sense, it's a ridiculous story, because it's almost like we didn't realize when David Cameron said we would have a new relationship with China, that would lead to a new relationship with China. It's utter bilge. I'm not scared of China taking over Britain, because they already own half of Britain, because most of it's been built there. Same goes for America, by the way. I'm not concerned about the Chinese spying on us, because in practical terms, what's it mean?
Right.
It means they can work out what we're going to buy as consumers and make it even better.
Right. I mean, it is a bizarre thing, because everyone's saying today or yesterday when the news came out, oh, we got a big problem with China spying on us. I mean, this has just come out of the blue. I mean, they must have known that there was a risk of this years and years ago, like you say. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous just to suddenly say, oh, there's a problem which everyone would have known about, and then they're making it public right now. But why do you think that this is happening now? Why now? Is there a reason for it, or is this just random? Is it, or are they trying to start a new narrative that China is our enemy or something like that?
About the general election. In reality, China is an absolutely essential ally to us. Without China, we wouldn't have our standard of living. So let's keep this in perspective. This is a sinking government trying to find a new enemy to gain votes, because they think wars win votes. We can't go to war with China. We depend on them completely. And China's playing it smart by playing it cool. They tried to humiliate the Chinese ambassador the other day by telling him off. They'll be laughing all the way to the bank, as will China.
It seems like there's economic
dependence on China matters.
Yeah. Rishi Sunak's also said that there's a new axis of authoritarian powers, and he named Russia and China along with Iran a North Korea. Is that some kind of posturing, do you think, as well?
Yeah, clearly it is. We should add one more authoritarian regime, and that's the United Kingdom, where you can be...
Yeah, I think we lost Loping.
Failure some comments. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I have got problems with the signal today.
No, we can hear you again. We can hear you again now. We just lost you for a second.
Apologies. I think my signal is slightly limited. Maybe the Chinese are interfering. Who knows? I don't think so, because I'm on their side here. Apologies for the poor signal, but let me finish the point and obviously go to Basil if you can't hear me. Very simply, this is British electoral posturing. We are an authoritarian regime where gender identity politics have caused a woke agenda to shut and silence people up. And worse than that, we've also got this complete schizophrenia, where we depend on China for so much, and now we're pretending they're our enemy. They're smart enough to see this as rubbish. And so in that sense, I don't take any of this seriously. And I honestly don't care if China's spying on us. We're not going to declare war on them. So let's just keep the peace here and recognize that we need them more than they need us.
Yeah, well, just finally, I mean, if China is spying on us, I mean, that is, it is what it is. But are they spying on us any more than the UK and the US governments are doing?
No, and they're not spying on us any more than Americans spied on Germany. Our friend Julian Assange exposed the fact that America spies on its allies. China might spy on us, might not to, but we can't be sanctimonious.
Yeah, it seems like everybody is playing the same
game. So come on. Yeah, same game. Yeah.
Indeed. All around the world, governments are spying on their own people as well as people in other countries, which is something that was very disturbing to me when I realized probably my own government is spying on me. I'm probably a person of interest. Maybe you are as well, Lembit. And they're looking at everything we do just as much as some foreign power might be doing.
That's probably why I've got signal problems, because this is going through MI5. They want to censor me because I might be sounding like too much of a friend of our enemy China, which is really our friend anyway. Come on, let's get off our high horses. The whole of the world's now run on an economic basis. That's how we fight wars. And the last country we're going to declare war on economically is China.
Right. Well, that's a good point to end. We certainly don't want another war, whether it's physical or economic, with China, to add to the wars that the Western leaders, not the people, but the crazy leaders in the West, seeming to be escalating in Ukraine and also in the Middle East as well. Anyway, Lembit, thank you so much for joining me there from your Bulgaria, isn't it? So good to see you, and see you again soon. No. Marvellous. Thank you, Lembit. Well, have a great time, and see you again soon. Thank you. Great. Now, also joining me on the show today to discuss what is happening with the health of the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, who was shot in an assassination attempt yesterday. He was rushed to hospital. Apparently, he is recovering, but still in a serious condition, although not critical. To discuss that and why this might have happened is TNT's political correspondent, Basil Valentine. Welcome to the show, Basil.
And hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. Before we go to Mr. Fico, who does look as if he's going to survive this assassination attempt, having been shot in the stomach, I just want to pick up on what Lembit was saying and why the UK government should suddenly be wanting to make an enemy of the Chinese. And it's worth noting that Vladimir Putin, who the UK government considered to be their real enemy, is currently in Beijing with President Xi, sending a message to the world that the ties between China and Russia are stronger than ever. This on a state visit, with Putin, of course, looking for further support for the military action in Ukraine. So on the basis that people often reduce international relations these days to my enemy's enemy is my friend, or my enemy's friend is also my enemy, I can't help thinking that the timing of this to coincide with Putin's trip to Beijing has got a lot to do with why we suddenly want to whip up some further enmity with the Chinese, who, as Lembit says, are, you know, they make everything that we use. There's no question of an economic war, let alone a hot war with China.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, we're so dependent on them for everything, like you say, and they talk about spying, but a lot of the components that are embedded deep inside our telecommunication systems, not just the mobile telecom system, but the land system that where the internet and broadband runs on, have been, you know, relies on components made by China. I mean, they're talking about getting rid of Huawei from the 5G network. That's a whole other issue, whether you like 5G or not, but their components have been embedded in broadband and the internet since the early 90s. So there's no way we're going to be able to get rid of them, you know, unless we stop using everything for a few years and build it up completely new. And that's just not going to happen, is it? But yes, yeah, exactly. Obviously, yeah, yeah. So,
well, I was just going to say, I mean, there's no question of undermining our economic relationship with China. The only people that would be hurt are the British people if we do that. I really do think that this is because of the ever-deepening relations between China and Russia. Xi yesterday told his old friend Putin that China-Russian relations are conducive to peace. Now, the language used on these occasions, as you know, is very carefully choreographed and agreed in advance. So for Xi to describe China's Russia as conducive to peace is quite significant. The Chinese want a role in the Middle East. China is ready to work with Russia to uphold fairness and justice in the world, said Xi. Now, you can say, oh, well, he's lying. He's an autocrat. This is nonsense. But the simple fact is that the Chinese build hospitals all around the world and the Americans blow them up. China is ready to work. The China-Russia relationship today is hard-earned, and the two sides need to cherish and nurture it. Putin, in turn, told Xi that the two countries' relations are a stabilizing factor in the international arena. insisting that relations between Russia and China are not opportunistic and not directed against anyone. Putin went on, "Together we uphold the principles of justice and a democratic world order that reflects multipolar realities and is based on international law." Now, Ukraine, you can say Putin has defied international law, Xi is an autocrat, but nevertheless, they're making the right sort of constructive noises. Put it that way, David.
Well, I mean, it's good. Two nations that are very powerful want to work together, and they're totally entitled to do that. And we shouldn't stand in their way. They can do what they want. The thing with the collective West, or the American Empire, if you want to call it that, this is probably, you know, what we are, or the Anglo-American Empire, seems to want to interfere. And if the leaders of this Western empire, you know, which is collapsing in moral decay and economic decay, are not happy with other countries getting on and cooperate, they want to throw a spanner in the works and start rattling the saber and threatening them, which I think is completely counterproductive. Because what we need to do is focus on our own countries, build up our own society, build up our own economies, and work productively and collaboratively with other countries around the world, rather than saying, "Oh, you're doing well. We can't have that. We're going to, you know, try and stop you from, exactly, from advancing and doing well." It's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. And who have the Chinese bombed over the last 25 years? Nobody, you know. Whereas the record of the United States, often with Britain's support in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, is just one of death and destruction. That's what America leaves behind. It's simply a great big pile of rubble and a lot of grieving families. Interestingly enough, the FICO situation, if we can move on to that, who wanted to kill him? Well, here are some characteristics. He is against the war in Ukraine and in favor of negotiations. He stopped the delivery of weapons to Ukraine. He called the regime in Ukraine a Nazi regime. He announced a veto for Ukraine to join the European Union and NATO. And he opposes the globalists in Washington. So if you want to sort of look at his positions and therefore who is likely to want to target him, it's pretty obvious, and it isn't going to be the Russians. He's currently fighting for his life in hospital, having been shot in the small northeast town of Bratislava, apologies. It's not thought to be a life-threatening condition. And last night, Defense Minister Robert Kalinak said that Mr. Fico had been in surgery for over 3 hours, and that although the situation is bad, he is expected to survive. Slovak politicians, including the president, have called the shooting an attack on democracy. And there are, of course, eerie parallels, David, with Sarajevo in 1914, not very far geographically from where Mr. Fico was shot at all, and the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, that many people say was the pivotal moment in the run-up to the First World War.
Well, I hope it's not going to be that serious. I mean, I hope that he makes a full and quick recovery. Obviously, our prayers and our thoughts are with him. But I certainly don't want this to be another moment where we escalate to a new world war, which would be World War III, which would be far, far more destructive than anything that happened in World War I, even though that was terrible. And, you know, what Western powers need to do is maybe use this moment to take stock, step back a bit and say, are we doing the right thing? Because apparently, you know, some of the commentary about what's happening is that the left-wing establishment and the left-wing media, the progressive media, was really viciously attacking Prime Minister Fico because of his position, yes, because he's on the right side of everything over the last 4 years. He was against lockdowns, against injections, he's against the Ukraine war, he's against the WHO treaty, and they don't like that because he's standing in the way of the globalist plans. But we just got a minute left, but do you think that, you know, people might take stock and use this as a moment to see sense?
Well, let's hope so. Interestingly enough, the assailant has been arrested, though not yet identified. He's supposed to be an older individual. We don't know who he was working for or why yet. Suffice to say that His identity and motives may remain very murky for some time to come. We all know about the possibility of Manchurian candidates, David, of, you know, apparently unconnected lone gunmen who, in fact, are working for shadowy forces.
Indeed. Well, let's hope that we have a good ending to this and there'll be no more assassinations, although we live in a dangerous world.
Indeed.
We all are under threat. But anyway, Basil, thank you so much for coming on the show and joining me today to talk about these very, very important issues. And coming up next, Rick Munn will be here with Locked and Loaded, and what he has on the show with him, Professor Ian Plimer, Leighton Gray, Dr. Mary Bowden, and Basil, you're back with Rick Munn again. You're doing overtime today. Anyway, keep watching, and I'll see you again tomorrow here on today's News Talk TNT.